This is the Eye on Potatoes, brought to you by the National Potato Council. The Eye is the place to tune in for conversations with growers and thought leaders on advocacy, production, and all things potatoes. Now, here's your host, Lane Nordland.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to another Eye on Potatoes podcast. I'm Lane Nordland, happy to be with you as always. And again, a big shout out to our presenting sponsor, our friends at Syngenta. They deliver solutions to help producers face the potato industry's complex challenges. You know, Syngenta provides growers with unmatched field expertise along with an array of effective products. You can explore Syngenta-us.com/spuddoctor to discover solutions for your potato growing obstacles. Again, a big shout out to our friends at Syngenta here today. Well, the focus of today's conversation is going to be a mid-year DC check-in. And sometimes on the Eye on Potatoes podcast, we're in person, whether that's at the Washington Summit, the Potato Expo, or the multiple events that MPC hosts through the year. Or it just happens that the three of us on this podcast happen to be in Washington, DC at the same time. Joining us here today, Cam Coral, CEO of the National Potato Council, and RJ Andrus, President of the National Potato Council from the great state of Idaho, joining us here live from the MPC office in Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, how's it going here on this spring day?
Yeah, going good, Lane. It's good to see you again. Always a pleasure to be on. So, yeah, it's things are good. We're in town primarily for the APTA meeting, which is for the American Potato Trade Alliance, and we do that every summer here in D.C. We talk about a myriad of things, trade, policy, MRLs. We do a multitude of issues while we're there. So, yeah, we finished that meeting today. We have a reception tonight. And then tomorrow, Cam and I hit the hill all day and do hill visits.
And Cam, how are things going out here in the nation's capital?
It's great. It's good to see you guys here at the global headquarters of the National Potato Council. It sounds vastly bigger when you say global headquarters rather than just the MPC offices. So I thought I'd try that one out.
I liked it.
Okay, global's good. I like that.
Yeah, there you go.
Sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is.
Yeah, we can go with the global headquarters. And as we mentioned, it is June 2023. And RJ, I know for the producers in my neck of the woods in Montana, my home state, we've been getting some very much needed moisture. Now, I know a lot of producers obviously use irrigation in the potato game, but what is the sentiment from producers out in Idaho, and what's it like talking with your fellow board members from Montana, Idaho, Colorado, all the way up to the Northeast and the PNW? What's it been like for them here as we move through springtime 2023 and getting that crop in the ground?
You know, we had a late spring, so everybody kind of got under the gun planting potatoes, but it appears now that things are in the ground, we did put the potatoes in warm soil, so we got early sprouting, and it appears that, you know, it looked like we're going to be behind a little bit, but it appears that we're pretty much on schedule, and the water certainly has been a blessing to us, because last fall, everything was dry, and if we hadn't got the winter we got, we're kind of staring down the barrel of a pretty mean gun.
Well, that's good to hear, and moisture is always a godsend for all of our producers out in the countryside, and that just makes folks' attitude a little bit better, no doubt. And Cam, you know, we're here, and we have a lot of topics to talk about here today, from trade access to waters of the U.S. to the MPC summer meeting, but maybe let's just give a quick glance at what's been going on in D.C. over the last few weeks.
Well, Lane, the thing that's kind of captured everybody here in D.C. has been whether or not we were going to have a train wreck over this whole debt limit deal. And ultimately, without getting into all the gory details, it was pretty positive. The kind of common sense folks got together. They made a deal. The sort of the extremists on both sides of the parties got, for lack of a better word, kind of shucked off. And you had a core group of folks in the middle get to a pretty overwhelming couple of bipartisan votes to get this thing across the finish line, and now we can get back to business. That's the positive thing. You know, forgetting about all the debt limit stuff, now we can actually focus on things that matter. like getting the government funded for the balance of the year. We can look at things like a new farm bill, all of those things. Now it's back on the table, where the debt limit was just this huge kind of stop sign that blocked any constructive work up until now.
And, you know, with that, a big focus over the last few months and looking ahead is the farm bill. And I want to get back to that discussion here later in our conversation. But circling it back, RJ, to the American Potato Trade Alliance meetings that have been going on, or APTA, as we call it, you know, well, it's so important to have these face-to-face meetings. We've talked so much about it on this podcast, about when COVID hit, MPC was still strong. There's folks working day in and day out, Cam and his team, representing the potato interest here in Washington, D.C. But for yourself, being a producer leader, how important is it to have these face-to-face interactions with all these key stakeholder groups where the decisions are made here in Washington?
You know, it's extremely important, and I don't think we really understood how important it is until we were not able to do it face-to-face and everybody had to do it remotely. So it's extremely important that we get together with face-to-face people, with the USTR, with FAS, with all the groups that can come in and talk to us and let us know what they're doing, focus on our concerns, and it's nice to be in the same room with those folks.
And what were some of the topics or conversations, if we can maybe share what some of those details were this week?
Well, for APTA, we were looking at a variety of trade issues. The Matt Lance and his great team at BCI set up very informative discussions. We had folks from USTR, USDA come in and talk. You know, we went essentially all the way around the globe. European issues, issues in Pacific Rim markets. Talked a lot about, as Matt has said, it's one of the driest issues, but it's also incredibly important, are being able to keep pesticides on the market. These maximum residue levels, if you don't get that right, you potentially could have an entire country blocked from being able to export. And so Matt and his great team at BCI, they spent a lot of time on that. Pretty in-depth, pretty technical. But as RJ and I were talking last night at dinner, I think for folks who aren't engaged in this, they think a lot of these wins just kind of, you know, it's just good government and it kind of falls out of the sky. It's not. We can have real disasters if you don't have really committed, smart people pushing on these issues, and we're very fortunate in the APTA space that we really do.
And Cam, what does it mean? Obviously, you're going to have some Hill visits also this week with RJ. You know, you're on the Hill every single day, but what's it mean? Obviously, we had the Washington Summit a few weeks ago, but having your grower leaders with you up on the Hill, what's that mean, just having that face-to-face interaction with the folks that are boots on the ground in the countryside every day?
Well, it's huge, and, you know, it says a lot about our grower leaders that they're willing to take the time. You know, RJ wasn't the smallest commitment he's ever made to fly out here for a week and go up on the Hill with us. Says a lot about how they prioritize not just their own farm, but the entire industry, and really make a lot of time to go out and do these really important visits. You know, for lack of a better word, RJ's a real person. You know, I'm a lobbyist. I am not voting for anyone out in some of our key production states, because I live right here in D.C. So I know the policy side of things, but RJ can actually tell all of these really important policymakers, we're going to go see House and Senate Ag Committee, we're going to see members all over the place, Finance Committee, and he can really make the case what this means to family farms across the U.S., and particularly in the states that these folks represent.
And RJ, for yourself, what's it like going into an office for maybe the second, third time, or multiple times, and having that interaction with an elected official, staff, and themselves? And what's it like going into an office for the first time and having that interaction and opening the world to these elected leaders and their staffs about what the U.S. potato industry is?
Well, the first time you go, it's intimidating, and you kind of don't know what to say. But after you go multiple times and you get to know these people, it's actually great to be face-to-face, because like Cam said, we are the face. Cam actually is the face of the industry, but he's here all the time. They see him. So when they see multiple people from the industry come to town and share the concerns and issues, it's extremely important for that.
And I know one of those topics you'll be discussing this week is trade and trade opportunities, and we have talked for hours about Mexico Fresh Access. We're not going to do that today, for the most part. I want to talk about our friends in the Asian Pacific, in more particular in Japan. I know this week we have a trade delegation from the U.S. government over there working on opening more agricultural trade opportunities. That includes more opportunities for U.S. Potatoes. Cam, when we look at this, we could potentially see over $150 million or more in trade for the U.S. industry. Why is it such a key focus for the potato industry to focus on countries like Japan and sending our product?
Well, you mentioned Mexico, and the only thing I'll say about that is Japan really is almost, in terms of the opportunity that we believe is out there, it's really a mirror image. We believe Mexico fully built out about $150 million a year. Japan, very similar to that. And they also, the other similarity is a very entrenched domestic industry that effectively has free rein to serve their market. Understandably, they have some concerns about a new, really high-quality entrant into their own market in the U.S. industry. They know the type of quality that growers like RJ can deliver to their restaurants and grocery stores. And, you know, that I think superficially they view that as a threat. My personal belief is that once we get in there with a solid supply, both of U.S. fresh potatoes and then complementing the production in Japan, it's actually going to create opportunities that the Japanese growers have never seen before. And we're actually, that rising tide is going to be able to lift all boats. But, you know, when you look at the history of this, we first started making these requests about 20 years ago. So to some degree, kind of rivaling the Mexico issue. But really, it's just been prioritized in the last about 4 years. And the reason there's such focus on it now, you mentioned the congressional letter and the delegation that's over there right now. The reason that there's such focus is because of that, some of that political pressure coming from the domestic industry, negotiations have basically been in stasis. They've just stalemated for the last over 3 years. We're trying to break that loose. This pressure is doing it, both in Japan, through Congress, Secretary Vilsack, Ambassador Tai. It's got to be a real coordinated effort to get this thing to the finish line.
And what goes into, jumping back to that conversation about the letter that members of Congress sent on the potato industry's behalf to Secretary Vilsack, urging his assistance, what is that like, rounding up that support, writing a letter, and making sure that it has everything included that producers like RJ need to have included in it?
Yeah, and I think RJ can kind of talk to some of this, but one thing that we really preach here at the National Potato Council level is none of these things are solved through the efforts of individuals. It's all a team approach. And so, we obviously have the mandate. We deal with the international issues here at NPC, but delivering all of those high quality members of Congress, I mean, shoot, you had very significant members from Maine to Washington to Idaho to North Dakota, all across the country. That happens because the states are all aligned and they're all going to their individual delegations and saying, please prioritize this. Take some time out of your day and focus on the potato industry. They get their attention and we get results because of that really strong collective effort.
Now, I've been on trade missions, particularly in the livestock genetics realm on an international scale, but when USDA does a full-out trade mission, Cam, what does that look like? What do the meetings entail, and how important is it to have these face-to-face relationship with buyers, especially in that Asian market?
Yeah, and the real priority for these trade missions is to make whatever country you're going to very comfortable and excited about U.S. products. And so you'll have kind of an amalgamation of folks who join the various U.S. officials on these trade missions. So you'll have specialty crops there. You'll have potentially the beef industry will be there, or corn, or the dairy industry. It depends on the country that you're going to. So it's really kind of an amazing cross-section of all of the all of the export-dependent pieces of the U.S. ag economy. This week that's occurring in Japan, right as we're speaking, we've got officials from the Idaho Potato Commission are there. So they're able to carry that message directly both to the U.S. and Japanese officials while we're doing the work here on Capitol Hill.
Yep. Well, I do want to jump into a victory that so many people in rural America, as they are calling it, in a decision out from the U.S. Supreme Court, but I would just like to take a quick commercial break to thank our friends at Syngenta. We'll be back right after these words.
Syngenta cares about potato producer productivity and offers a wide variety of seed treatment options, protecting your investment from the beginning. Syngenta's all-liquid seed treatment Cruiser Max Vibrance Potato offers protection from harmful insect pests, including Colorado potato beetle, green peach aphid, and leafhoppers. Additionally, Cruiser Max Vibrance Potato delivers immediate protection against fungal diseases. Contact your local retailer for information on Cruiser Max Vibrance Potato, Cruiser Max Potato Extreme, or Maxim MZ to find out what best fits your farm needs.
Again, a big thank you to our friends at Syngenta for helping bring you our Eye on Potatoes podcast each month. Well, I tell you what, as we come back with Cam Corals and RJ Andress from the global headquarters of the National Potato Council, for the last few weeks, being a farm broadcaster, every day I was checking the docket of the U.S. Supreme Court to see what announcements and decisions were being handed down. And, you know, usually those decisions come out on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. Well, this summer it's just been all over the board, it seems, and when those announcements were going to come out. And it felt like the Sackett versus EPA case, which, of course, many saw as a pushback against the federal government's expansion of the CWA, also known as the Clean Water Act. And the court came out with a unanimous 9-0 decision that the court significantly narrowed the definition of the areas regulated under the Clean Water Act. This has been a top priority for landowners, farmers, ranchers, developers, and it's been something interesting to watch, from the Obama 2015 WOTUS rule to the repeal of that, to the Trump Navigable Waters Protection Act, to the repeal of that, to the Biden Waters of the U.S. Act. That could be a lot to understand. I'm sure someone's like, Lane, shut up and ask your question. But that's a lot to explain what the Sackett versus EPA case that originally came from RJ's backyard, not his backyard in particular, but a couple, the Sackett family from Idaho, taking it all the way from the state of Idaho to the U.S. Supreme Court. But Cam, obviously agriculture had a vested interest in this U.S. Supreme Court decision. It made its way through the U.S. legal system. In a nutshell, why were farmers and ranchers so invested into this outcome in terms of what many call an overreach by the federal government on what waters truly are navigable? The Nexus test, just share the MPC's view on that.
Yeah, and you know, I think this particular case and, you know, kind of the evolution, the entire WOTUS issue, really, it triggered a lot of folks, and RJ can speak to this, just kind of at the grower level. It really appeared to be the federal government significantly overreaching its authority, and I'll let you kind of
well,
speak
just,
to that, RJ.
Overregulation on family farms is just bad policy all the way around.
I don't think I can put it a lot better than that. I mean, that really was it kind of galvanized everybody when you saw that ditches in a pasture that hadn't held water in half a century, potentially you would need to go out and get a Clean Water Act permit to work your own land. That was pretty extreme.
And I know there was so much frustration at the end of December of last year in 2022. The Biden administration put forward their Waters of the U.S. rule. And the crux of that was the significant nexus test, which ultimately means if a trickle of water can make it to another body of water, that means it's a governable under the Clean Water Act. I know the National Potato Council was in full support of a resolution to reverse the WOTUS rule that passed both the House and the Senate, but it was vetoed by President Biden. What was that like being a part of that process?
Yeah, so that effort, just so we don't confuse listeners, you had two things going on in parallel. The Supreme Court was considering the fundamental legal issues surrounding, as you said, what started
this
all.
They heard the argument in October, I believe, of last year.
Yep. Right, and we were waiting for the decision since that time. That was in the Sackett case. But also, at the same time, in parallel, Congress was, they have the authority when the administration creates a rule, and it could be on anything. It could be on WOTUS, it could be on, you know, farm bill policy, or, you know, anything. Congress has the ability, with enough votes, to, they can overturn those rules. It's called the Congressional Review Act. It's a little challenging where you have to have the votes, but then typically what you're overriding is something that the president has decided is a priority for him. So the president has the ability to then go in, as you said, and it happened in this case. Congress can move that forward, but then the president can veto it. And so effectively, you have to have a supermajority in Congress. You've got to be able to override a veto. Often the math just doesn't work there. But so Congressional Review Act, all that work was going on. But what the real effort was at the Supreme Court. And I think what was interesting, and I was a little surprised at some of the folks who kind of, you know, it's not the agriculture world, it's not experts in environmental policy, it's kind of the talking heads who are more the partisans. They characterize this as some sort of, you know, 5-4, you know, the Supreme Court was divided again. It was not.
Yeah.
It was a unanimous decision by the Supreme Court that the way that this WOTUS rule was written was a significant government overreach. And that's, to me, it's kind of like we were talking earlier. You had folks get together around common sense over the debt limit, and you got a lot of votes. And the Supreme Court looked at what was really kind of an overreach on how to implement the Clean Water Act, and common sense prevailed. And to me, that was a really positive message. I know some of the environmental activists are pretty upset about that. I get it. They're extreme voices, but it is hard to sit there and say both the Republican nominees and the Democratic nominees unified that this was bad policy. That was the takeaway from the Supreme Court.
Well, and with that, too, in that Sackett versus EPA case coming down, as we mentioned, just so I'm not confusing listeners out there either, when the Biden rule was pushed forward and implemented into law, states did take action, and that Biden WOTUS rule was put on injunction in 26 states. So effectively, it was law in 23 states, but and technically, it's still law in those 23 states, but the real hiccup for the Biden rule is that the significant nexus test really cannot be utilized going forward in determining what is a waters of the U.S. or applicable under the Clean Water Act. What is the talk up here in Washington, D.C. in terms of how that Biden rule will continue, how they may walk it back? What will that process look like, Cam?
Well, and it's my understanding, and I'm not a lawyer arguing before the Supreme Court. I'm a lobbyist arguing near the Supreme Court. I don't think that really counts. The court basically sent this rule back to the administration and said, look, here's the infirmities in it. As you said, the significant nexus test drug in anything that could possibly hold water under anyone's wildest fever dream was now subject to regulation by the Clean Water Act and all of the thousands of dollars in penalties that could ride along with that. The Supreme Court rejected that and said, no, look, if you've got a body of water that is consistently connecting to a navigable water all right, that reasonably should be covered by the Clean Water Act, but not every ditch and stream and damp spot and depression out in the middle of someone's pasture. That seems to be a fairly reasonable standard. Again, the onus is going to be back on the administration, how they want to address this, how they rewrite it in order to get the blessing. Because certainly, if you come back in a creative way, it's going to be litigated, and it's going to likely end up back at the Supreme Court again. So they are constrained by how much flexibility they have in what their rewrite looks like.
But RJ, for yourself as a producer and watching this play out, it can be a little frustrating. Obviously, a lot of people argue that the Biden administration should have held off on releasing their WOTUS rule until the Supreme Court, you know, made their decision and they could adapt that rule accordingly. But it seems like there's going to be a lot of time and money now in that rewriting. Again, why is it so important for you as a producer to have your voice heard out here in D.C. and having Cam working for you guys every single day on these issues?
It's like I said, it's overreach. And it's for family farms, it's horrible policy. Like Cam said, if you have a ditch with a puddle in it and that's construed as that, it's just bad policy. Yep. All the way around.
Well, and with that, Cam, kind of circling that back to more of our conversations, looking at the farm bill, RJ's here talking with producers as well. We're going to be talking about farm bill. And, there's a hope we can pass that farm bill in 2023. I know the last farm bill, it took maybe a little bit longer than folks wanted to, but what are we looking forward to here in the Farm Bill? I know you've worked a lot as a vice chair of the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance. What were some of those key priorities that we're looking at on that front?
Yeah, I mean, the main issue, you kind of spoke to a little bit, Lane. We're hopeful that Congress can meet the timeline that's necessary to get a new Farm Bill stood up when the old one expires, but we can't control any of that. The only thing that we can control is making sure that we are organized. Whenever the congressional train moves, we want to be able to be on it. And so we spent a huge amount of time. Remember, it started back at the Potato Expo, not in the Rockies in Colorado, but at the at Anaheim at our expo a year and a half ago. That's when the first Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance meetings began. We hashed through for over a year all of the priorities for the fruit and vegetable industry. We got to some really good ones, and I think what RJ and I are going to be talking about as we go around on the Hill and talk Farm Bill is putting a face to those important priorities. Research, so fundamental to making agriculture successful, not just next year, but in 2, 3, 4 decades from now. Research investments can do that. We've been talking trade, huge deal in the Farm Bill. How you deal with risk management for producers, making sure if, God forbid, something like COVID happens again or some other unforeseen circumstance, how is the federal government going to responsibly stand behind these family farms to make sure that they don't go out of business? Nutrition policy, all of these things. I can talk sort of the technicalities. RJ can talk about why it matters to producers in our industry.
Well, let's do that, RJ. Obviously, without a farm bill, there's a lot of uncertainty in how producers can carry forward with so many different programs, whether that's trade, having a safety net, having a voice in terms of nutrition, and having your product out in front of consumers. What's the producer angle on this?
Well, I mean, it's like the research thing that Cam was talking about. That research is a huge piece of our push here, because it not only helps us, it's sustainable, but it actually makes us competitive for years to come, and it puts us on the cutting edge of things. So research is a very important piece of the Farm Bill that we're excited about.
And also, we talk about trade and looking like that. I mean, RJ, you can't leave the farm. It's tough for you to get out to Washington, D.C. So on that, especially during the springtime, how important is it knowing that you have trade also built into that farm bill? Because I think a lot of the time people think farm bill, they think just safety net or they think nutrition programs. There is so much more built into this bill.
Yeah, nutrition, trade, is so important to our industry. We have to have the trade that we have, and we have to keep that going forward.
And I'll just mention, Lane, on the trade front, this is a really collaborative effort, because you know we go out and lobby for really strong trade resources under the Farm Bill, and then it's Potatoes USA. They're what's called, this is the technical term, they're the cooperator. So they're the grant recipient that then goes out and implements these programs. So when we push a door open in Japan or in Mexico or any of these other markets, it's Potatoes USA that helps us walk through it with these trade programs in promoting U.S. potatoes and the value, and they do it in an amazing number of ways. A lot of that's supported by USDA, and it really matters to our great trade figures.
Now, Cam, what is it looking like? There's more conversations surrounding climate, our natural resources, our stewardship. How is that going to look a little different in this Farm Bill?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and some of this, honestly, Elaine, has kind of been taken off the table because a lot of the climate funding occurred in the Inflation Reduction Act, if you remember that bill last year. There were major calls, roll it back to the beginning of this Congress, the beginning of the prior Congress. There were calls to have a lot of money embedded in the climate space, and then there were also calls to really slash a lot of the food stamp programs. There was a feeling, I mean, the nutrition is not a small part of the Farm Bill. It's like 85% of the Farm Bill. So people rightfully are saying, this isn't really a Farm Bill. It's a nutrition bill with some farm spending. Those two things have been taken off the table. Climate in the Inflation Reduction Act, a lot of money went there. So the Farm Bill doesn't have to carry all of those expenses. And then under the Debt Limit Act, some of the work requirements, that negotiation went on between the White House and Congress, that's been taken off the table. So I'm sort of answering your question as a tangent, but it's really important is a lot of the big kind of things that could have really blown up a Farm Bill, now they're off the table, and there's real reason for optimism. Getting back to what we were talking about earlier, Congress has got some free rein to run now.
Exactly. And as we look at just the activity up here on the Hill that you all are participating in, you know, Farm Bill is still going to be a big discussion coming up here at the end of the month. Actually, everyone's going to be heading to Lake Tahoe for the MPC summer meeting. RJ, obviously, we've got together a few times here in 2023, but what's in store for attendees coming up in Tahoe?
You know, we're excited about the venue. It's June 27th through the 29th, and it's at the Hyatt Regency Lake Tahoe Resort. Before this, looked at the weather. The weather's going to be awesome, it looks like.
There's not going to be a blizzard, and you can make it over the pass with your wagon train.
Really not going to guarantee that, but we're hopeful that the extended forecast is right. But, we're going to have our committee and board meetings. Discuss and define, you know, our priorities for the rest of the year. Receptions, dinners, outdoor activities. We'd like everybody that can to attend. So you can learn more and register at nationalpotatocouncil.org. And the hotel's filling up, so we book fast. It's going to be a great time.
So how do you get to the hotel? Do you fly into Reno and then bust yourself up there or drive? I guess what's that distance look like? Some folks might be interested in that, Cam.
Yeah, it's about a 45 to 50 minute drive if you're going into Reno, which mm-hmm. a lot of folks are going to go into Reno, and then you'll drive up the hill. It'll take you 45 to 50 minutes. So if folks have come to Washington, D.C., you land at Dulles, it's the same amount of time to get into the city, kind of the same amount of time. But I would say that getting to Lake Tahoe is a little bit more attractive than getting to downtown.
That's Washington, some big D.C. water down there.
Yeah, the lake's going to be full.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It gets to white capping out there. I'm kind of scared of that lake, but it's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, the weather looks good, so hopefully it's going to be a good weather week, and it'll be a great time. We're looking forward to it.
No. I would hate to miss Holly, Maddie, everybody on the MPC team does a great job putting these events together. This is going to be one of the best summer meetings in terms of venue and substance I think we've ever had. And I think people are absolutely good. Yeah, coming off an incredibly strong Potato Expo, this is the next, and then we had a great Washington Summit, and then being able to go to a summer meeting in a great place like this, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, I know you have more to do this afternoon here out in our nation's capital, but any last thoughts that you would just like to share with our audience? I know we covered a lot of different topics here in just 30 minutes, but RJ, just a message out to your fellow producers out in the countryside that are tuning in. They might be getting some stuff done out in the field or in the shop working on some equipment. What are some last thoughts from your role as president of the MPC?
Lane, I'm kind of a broken record on this, and I've said it on several podcasts, but stay involved, get involved, stay involved, because there's strength in numbers and unity in the potato industry. So, yes, stay and get involved. And then stay involved.
Cam, any last thoughts?
You can hear it in kind of the passion and in RJ's voice. It's great to be able to work on the issues that we work on for the people that we work on their behalf. This is a tremendous industry. These individuals, to a person, are great people. They deal with a heck of a lot of challenges in making their businesses run, and it's just for all of us, it's a privilege to be able to support them in some small way, hopefully sometimes a big way, make their businesses run more efficiently.
Very well said. And for our listeners, if you want to learn more about all of these issues, whether it's trade, farm bill priorities, or the collaborations that the National Potato Council has, it's pretty easy. Just visit National Potato Council online. Again, hey, just a reminder, that summer meeting coming up June 27th through the 29th there at Lake Tahoe at the Hyatt Regency Resort. To make sure to get registered and get that hotel room booked here today. Well, Cam and RJ, two great Americans joining us here today for the National Potato Council's Eye on Potatoes podcast. I'm Lane Nordland. Thanks for joining us, gentlemen.
Thank you, Lane. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Lane.
I stole your line there, Cam.
Yeah, you did.
Well, friends, we will see you next time. I'm Lane Nordland. Have a great day.
Thanks for tuning in to the National Potato Council's Eye on Potatoes podcast with host Lane Nordland. For more information, visit nationalpotatocouncil.org and make sure to subscribe to the podcast today.